Hey listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast, the show that's not afraid to tell you that E.T. dies, but then comes back to life again. In each episode, we'll be discussing what we did and didn't like about video games, films, and TV shows. I'm Sean, one of your hosts, alongside Diarmid, and today we're joined by Scott Watson to talk about Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. If the name of the show hasn't given away yet, there will be some spoilers ahead. So, without further ado, here's the show.
This is your spoiler warning.
Welcome to yet another episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast. Today we are joined by a very special guest, but before we get to him, let's introduce my co-host, Diarmid. How are you doing, Diarmid?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm buzzing off the subject matter we'll be talking today.
Yes, but yes. Should be good.
Before we get into it, Scott, our lovely guest, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good day. Hello. Aloha. Yes, I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. How have you been?
I've been great, mate, and I think the last time we caught up was EGX in September, which we had a right rip-roaring time of it, didn't we? So,
yeah, it was pretty cool. I love video games, but today's podcast isn't about a video game. There's probably going to be a lot of franchise coming straight off it if you haven't seen yet. We are talking about Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Yes. God! Yes!
I've heard that you've watched it numerous times already. What made you go that many times?
Listen, Sean, I first saw A New Hope back in 77, 78, when I was 6 years old. And my cousin took me back then, and that got me fixed on Star Wars. So, as you can imagine, the past few years, when word came out about The Force Awakens coming out, it was like being a kid again. And I just felt, I was worried. I went to see it at midnight on Wednesday into Thursday there with one of the boys from my work, because I was desperate to avoid spoilers. I managed to go through the whole setup for this film without any major spoilers, so I wanted to be there at the start to make sure it wasn't spoiled. And then my boy, who is now 7 and about the same age I was when I went to see it, he's been desperate to go and see it. He's still to see the rest. He's seen most of Empire Strikes Back. He's still to see Return of the Jedi, but he wanted to go and see Force Awakens, and I couldn't say no. I was desperate to see it again, because I have to say, you know, the film just. I'm saying I could talk about it for ages, but I'm actually speechless by how good, to me as a Star Wars fan, it was. I don't even know where to start, but what was the best? There were so many great parts in it, so many great parts. But
we'll eventually get into it. I'll throw some specific questions your way. But Diarmid, you obviously watched it with myself for this podcast. What was your first take on seeing The Force Awakens?
I just remember we were sitting inside in the screen, and, you know, obviously all of the ads were running, all of the trailers were running, and then the LucasArts logo pops up, and then you get that big kind of dramatic entrance of the Star Wars logo, and then the scroll starts happening, and I was like, yep, we're back here again. And I'm loving it. And then the movie just kicks on from there. And it's, I think the best thing I can say about this movie is, unlike, at least for me, unlike the prequels, this movie could quite happily sit amongst the original trilogy. You could watch them 1, 2, 3, and 4, and it would all feel the same. Because I think the biggest compliment I can give JJ is he has made it feel like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now, everyone was talking about, you know, his propensity for screen for glare and all that kind of crap. None of that mattered. The way he shot it, everything, the way it was put together, the story that they actually told, superb.
Well, he was the right man for the job, and it's a shame that he's not going to be part of, you know, the 8th and 9th film, because I'm a big JJ fan. In fact, part of me wanting to, you know, get behind the excitement was the fact that he's done now Star Trek as well as Star Wars, as well as, you know, all of his other shows and films as well. So he was pretty cool for that. But yeah, like you mentioned earlier, once we were in the screen, there was a lot of diehard fans. The thing is, I've only get this same feedback with only the Star Wars films. Every time I've seen a Star Wars film, there has been a cheer when you see the opening bell. There's people that, you know, come with props, and you know, it's the greatest thing that you can have, I guess, like a good compliment for the film itself. So yeah, Scott, you said you saw it twice. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that it was better, or did you notice more things the second time around? Or, I mean, what was it like? Because we've only seen it once ourselves.
Oh, I have to say, the second time around, the first time was the nostalgia trip and just the soaking it all in. And yes, I did feel like, seeing it a second time, it suddenly felt, I knew where the story was going, I knew what was happening, and it allowed me to just kind of get into the characters a lot more and kind of pay more close attention to how they were reacting to the situations around about them and everything like that. And I have to say, you know, as you guys have said, forget the prequels, and even forget the original trilogy aside, it's still a stunningly great film. I really can't, you know, I can't praise J.J. Abrams highly enough for the job he did with this. You know, okay, you're looking, it has facets of A New Hope and Empire and Jedi all thrown in there, and you can maybe see a lot of these there in that story, but oh my god, it's Star Wars. It's Star Wars the way Star Wars should be.
Star Wars, the big franchise, big name, big brand it is, you know, once you sit down in the cinema and you know exactly what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my expectations was bettered. But let's talk about expectations now. Jimrid, firstly, I'll go to you. What were you expecting? Was it met or was it bettered? Or, you know, talk to us about that side of things.
Just based on, obviously, interviews beforehand, the trailers we've seen, things like that, I pretty much got what I expected. In terms of the story, though, I was too cynical going in, but I honestly thought they were just going to do A New Hope again with a new cast and just have a few callbacks to the old movies. But they didn't, and I praised them for that. They have similar characters and similar situations crop up, but usually the outcome is different, or they change things just enough. People have all, like, throughout the entire build-up, have been kind of saying, okay, so Rey must be the Princess Leia type. John Boyega is probably going to be the Luke type. Poe Dameron is going to be the Han Solo type. And they were just going to tell the same story again, just with those characters. And it turns out that's not the case. They've mixed everything up. They've done something different, which is what I like, and I applaud them for that. But the stuff that they have kept the same is the feeling that it's a lived-in world. One of my biggest issues with the prequels was it looked too shiny. It looked like the world was just so plastic and fake. This one just felt lived in. It felt, even when they were, you could see that the New Order, their equipment was slightly newer. But even then, there was grime on some of it and there was things like that. But then you look at the Resistance and their stuff was like basically the same stuff they had at the end of Return. You know, they didn't have like the budget or whatever to kind of, you know, buy in all of their stuff. The X-Wings, the TIE Fighters, they all look slightly updated as you'd expect when it's set 30 years later, but it just felt so good. And in terms of expectations, yeah, it was, my expectations were at a certain level, they were met, and then elements of the movie exceeded it. So I was very happy.
Great. Scott, you mentioned, you know, trying to stay away from all kind of spoilers and just in general, what kind of expectations did you have? And being a social media man, how did you manage to filter everything? Because I stayed away from social media in general. There was people saying to me, you know, it's a great film. I have not actually spoken to them since, just to keep a fresh mind. I don't want to say, oh, it's awesome, and then because they said it's awesome, I've already got it in my mind. But for you, Scott, how did you manage, you know, your expectations for The Force Awakens?
I mean, I have to say that comes back to the whole wanting to go and see it at midnight, you know, the other night, because I was terrified of somebody spoiling it. And I have to pay credit to the Star Wars fans in general, because there was so much hype surrounding this film that everybody that, or you know, everybody that I have seen commenting about the film on social media has stayed away from the spoilers. You know, they haven't gone out of their way. I haven't seen anybody being, being a stick in the mud and saying, "Oh yes, this happened and that happened." People have been genuinely very, you know, surprisingly great. But I mean, beforehand, I have to admit, I think the run up, the past week or so, running up to the release, I stayed clear of Twitter. Twitter in particular, I think. I was only really looking for information anytime there was a new trailer out. Anything else to do with the film, I wanted to steer clear of it, you know. Which is something that I have never done in the past with the likes of, you know, like the Avengers or any the Marvel series or the DC stuff, anything like that. I'm quite happy to read about spoilers, but with Star Wars, I wanted to get in fresh. I'm glad I went in fresh. You know, there were theories getting thrown about what was happening, but nothing concrete, and that to me worked a treat. I think you have to go in and see this as spoiler free as you can to get the impact of the film even more.
Definitely. I'm a good point that you brought up, that you had no prior knowledge to what was going to happen story wise. I mean, with the prequels, you knew where exactly it would have to lead to, because you've seen episode 4, 5, and 6, so you knew Anakin was gonna, you know, succumb to the dark side. You knew certain characters and heroes who aren't in 4, 5, and 6 were going to die. Mm-hmm. But for episode 7, you know, it's not a prequel. It's gonna be new content to us, and anything that was to happen, you know, no one knows about it prior unless they're very analytical of the trailers and stuff like that. And speaking of analytical of trailers and stuff. Let's go to some spoilers now. Let's talk about Ben Solo. I'm gonna call him Ben Solo from now, because he was a pretty cool character. Scott, did you work out that, you know, Kylo Ren was the son of Han and Leia?
I'll be honest, I'm absolutely rubbish at that kind of stuff. I'm terrible. I'm hopeless with film plots, that until it was so far into the film, I'm forgetting right at the start Max von Sydow kind of says to him, and my first notion was, he's Luke's son, you know. And then of course it goes on, and I'm thinking, I am hopeless, absolutely hopeless at these things, until somebody's there with a big placard saying, "Look, this is what this character is," you know. So I didn't have any inclination, which was, you know, which was great. It was more of an "oh" moment when it, you know, when it was revealed to me, you know.
Excellent. And how did you feel about, you know, it being a character that is, you know, someone's son? Surely it means that there's going to be affiliations to family, and it's rather than just like any other bad guy, you know, not tied to anything, so they can get killed easily. But this is a guy that's, you know, connected to two, you know, original cast members.
I mean, I suppose it's been said before on many occasions that Star Wars, the series of films are all based around the Skywalker family. They're always going to focus on the Skywalker family. So these characters, the family is going to be central to the plot there. So, you know, in a way, it's no real surprise that they've maintained that moving forward, you know?
Yeah. Durham, as you mentioned to me as we were setting up, that because it is very family orientated, it doesn't feel like most of the characters will be outside of the family kind of tree, so everyone is likely to be connected. We were speaking about Rey potentially being connected somehow, but what do you think about the whole Ben Solo kind of twist, and, you know, just family being connected as the bad guy?
I'll admit that I had an inkling that it was going to happen, purely based on the interviews that we've seen from Adam Driver or JJ Pope prior to the film. They talked about Kylo Ren being a conflicted character, and he's been trained in the dark side, but that's not where he came from, and we've heard all of these things. So I assumed he was going to be Luke's son, but, you know, doesn't matter. But one of the issues that I had, especially with the I keep bringing up the prequels, but it seems to be that they're the ones that commit most of the sins in this case, but one of the things I didn't like was the fact that, yes, it is about the Skywalker family, but not everybody has to know everybody. It makes the universe feel quite small. So I was hoping that you wouldn't have too much of that. And to be honest with you, you don't. You basically have Ben Solo. That is it. Rey, we don't, at least we don't find out that she is any relation to any of the characters yet. John Boyega is just a stormtrooper who has a crisis of faith, I suppose, in what he's doing, and he decides to try and get away from it all. And you have all of these new characters come in that build out the world rather than building it in, if you know what I mean. Not everyone is tied together. You have new stuff coming in. You've Lupita Nyong'o's character, Maz. Brilliant character. Maybe it's a cynical thing, but it felt almost like a Yoda kind of for this series. Hopefully she comes up again. I don't know. I thought that character was quite good. Mm. You had the Palpatine in the Snoke character, and I liked their portrayal of that. There was just this sinister edge to it, and I thought Andy Serkis was brilliant. You have all of these characters that they're not related to the Skywalker family. They're bigger than that, and it allows the universe to push out. You've Poe Dameron, never heard of him before. All we know in this movie is that he is an excellent pilot, and they show you that. I thought that scene outside of Maz's place after it gets destroyed, where you see John Boyega and then the camera pans up and you see Poe basically flying around blowing up, I don't know, about four or five different TIE fighters in one pan, and then it goes down to John Boyega, and he goes, "Well, that's an excellent pilot," or something like that, and you're just kind of like, "Yeah, that is an excellent pilot." That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see really good battles, really good characters, and just tell a really good story, and they've done it.
Yeah, episode 7. It was personally, I feel that it was filled more with emotions. And some humour as well, in comparison to any of the other Star Wars films. I'm not sure if it's because I was a lot younger and some of the humour could have been over my head, but it definitely was a lot of, you know, comic relief, some laugh out loud moments. And speaking of emotions, there was quite a lot of, you know, sadness, especially with Mr. Solo's demise with his son.
I'm sure that was sweat beads on your face, not tears, right? When I was looking over at you, no?
I could honestly put my hands up and say to anyone that's listening to this, as well as to you, Scott and Dermot, I was in bits throughout the whole film, mostly because of nostalgia, right from the get-go. Mm. I'm like, oh, it's the title sequence. I'm like, I can't control myself. Right up to the point where, you know, Han, you know, falls. And I was like, This has got real now. Forget about the humour. Something seriously bad has happened. And you see it in Leia's face that, you know, she has... Well, I don't... Actually, how has it stated how she found out?
Well, no, it's something that's hinted at in Return of the Jedi as well. Like, she knows that at the end, when in Return of the Jedi the Death Star blows up, she knows that Luke is safe because she can feel it. She has the Force as well. It's not as overt, but she has it. So she knows as soon as Han dies, she knows what happens. It's just, I liked that they didn't actually explain that. I liked that they just left it there and you were kind of going, oh, now I remember that she has it as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I liked that happened.
So Scott, speaking of emotions and humor, what were some of your best moments for both of those examples? You know, things that made you kind of, you know, chuckle, and something that could have moved you to tears if not.
You know, I have to say, like you were saying there, Sean, when I came out of it on Wednesday night and I was driving home, I felt numb. I felt emotionally drained because of it. You know, because I went through the whole scale from the entertaining moments, you know, with the humour to the, I mean, some of the, my favourite section was the chase scene, the first time when Rey picks up the Falcon for the first time and they're trying to escape the TIE fighters. I mean, that is incredible, seeing the way that she pilots that ship, you know. And that was really, it had the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. It was a real thrill ride. And then to that moment where you can see that moment on the bridge with Han, you know, and Kylo Ren, and going, oh my, I had, going into this, one of my friends had speculated that Chewie's going to bite it Han's going to go on a major revenge mission and find Luke and go forward that way. So I had it in my head at that moment that that Chewie was going to die, and I'm like, no. And then when it was Han, it hit me worse the second time today seeing it.
Really?
Because I couldn't believe this is a character that I have had in my life. That sounds terrible. That sounds a funny way to put it. Had in my life since I was 6 years old. And he's bitten the dust, and it was really, really upsetting. Really upsetting. More so today in the cinema. I'm trying not to let my 7-year-old boy see me, you know.
Yeah.
It was the cinematic tears running down the face, you know, and before the shaking of the shoulders comes in, like, Han can't be dead! He can't be dead!
They're like, quiet in front!
Oh, but you know what was a nice flip side to that was, you just saw Chewie ripping it. You know. Chewie just lost the rag and went, yeah, Stormtroopers, yeah, you're getting it. Bam, 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 bam. You know.
Well, without Han being around, I've always felt prior to this film that Chewie was always the cool, you know, sidekick. And it just seems like towards the end, when Chewie's now alongside with Rey going off into, you know, the Millennium Falcon, you know, he's going to have to stand out a bit bigger as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that when, you know, you have a side character now, you know, in the forefront of everything, because, you know, we get to see more from these characters. So speaking of characters that we didn't really see, Scott, what was your take on the whole not finding Luke right until the end? Were you happy that he wasn't all the way through the film? Were you happy with, you know, the fact that he was just there to tease you into episode 8? I mean, how do you take it?
Yeah, I like that fact because I think the great thing about this new trilogy setup here is that they have used the original cast sparingly. Or you could say Han was front and centre in this one for obvious reasons. But I like the whole, all throughout the build up to this film, they were teasing Luke without ever giving anything away, and I think it was quite fitting that he only appeared at the end, because I think the episode 8 is really going to herald that'll be when it'll be Luke's part of the story. Now we had Han in the first one. We'll probably see, I would imagine, this will be Luke and Rey in particular, obviously focusing on her journey with the Force with Luke, and then it's just going to be I think episode 9 is just going to be balls to the wall nuts.
Jeremy, the lack of Luke.
It didn't bother me. I mean, I had a feeling it was going to be a kind of a third act thing anyway, purely because in any of the trailers, we've already seen Chewie, we've already seen Han, we've already seen Leia. They didn't show a glimpse of Luke. So I had this idea in the back of my head that this is going to be a quest to get to Luke, so the movie's going to end there. Or it's going to... I thought they'd do it sooner, honestly. I thought, like, they'd meet Luke, and that was when the whole battle would happen and whatnot. But they did it later, so it didn't really matter. But I liked... We all knew that this, going in, that this was the first episode of a new trilogy. So we knew they were going to be setting stuff up for the rest. And obviously, that's what's happened here. Luke is... I said it was Maz earlier, but Luke is the new Yoda. Luke is the person who's going to take Rey under his wing and kind of teach her the Force, and that I think that's good. It kind of allows him to be in the movie, but similar to Yoda, be on the periphery. You don't want the old characters to be the primary focus. As you said, Scott, Han, there was a reason for that, and there was a reason he was kind of put front and center. But Leia appears in it sparingly, but the moments that she's in it are really good, you know. They kind of push forward the story. Similarly, Luke at the end, you get the feeling that he's going to be in the second one a bit more. But again, the new trilogy is about Rey, Finn, and probably we'll see more of Poe. So those characters are who we need to push forward, and Kylo Ren, obviously.
Definitely. With my views on Luke, I knew he was part of the set, part of the team. I knew that he wasn't going to be in the trailers because, well, I didn't know if he wasn't, but I knew there must be a reason why, and it makes sense. But towards the end of the film, when you see Chewie and Rey go off into, you know, into the distance, and they're flying off from the celebration, or kind of, you know, celebration, which you normally get at the end of every other Star Wars film. It normally ends with them being awarded, and I thought, okay, this is going to be traditionally how it would end. And then I thought, that's was going to have the credits rolling and there's been no Luke throughout it, I don't think I would have been too bothered. So that extra bit at the end when you have Rey walking up to Luke, and I was like, yes, this is a bit of extra content. I'm happy that it's there. I could have done without it. I'm happy it's there. But the only one thing I didn't want to happen, which was a good reason, but it's going to come up, is Mark Hamill starts talking. Because I know him as a Joker now, and I'm not going to be able to not hear him as Luke or anyone else other than a Joker. And I'm sure he must have gone through some intense training not to sound like Joker anymore. Because we've seen him in like 3 games, and it's going to be quite interesting for episode 8. But to wrap up this episode, I want to go around and just figure out what was your best moments just in the film. So Scott, what was the thing about The Force Awakens that you can take away as your favourite memory of a scene or a moment?
I think as I said earlier, the first chase in the Falcon on Jakku with the TIE fighters, just it was on the money for me. That part, and of course, I mean, you can't really talk about the film without talking about Han's death. Because that I felt, for me, it was really, really powerful. So those two moments were probably my most favourite moments of the film.
Excellent. Dermot?
I personally loved the fight scene at the end in the snow forest. You saw John Boyega fighting Adam Driver. You saw them battling. You knew that John Boyega didn't have a chance. His character, Finn, then got cut down. You know he's alive. That's fine. But it was that moment. I loved it, the way they shot it. You saw the lightsaber stuck into the snow. You saw it shaking just like it did in Empire Strikes Back. You saw it flying towards the character. And then you get that moment where, just like everything else, JJ just twisted it a bit. And basically, it went straight past the character you thought it was going to, and it went to Rey. And then you had that, what, maybe 2 separate scenes of them fighting, and it was just so exciting. And it was much more exciting than the lightsaber battles from the prequels. Mm-hmm. It was much more like, as I said, it fits in with the original trilogy. It was much more like that. Everything felt deliberate.
Yes.
It was like that fight scene at the end of Empire Strikes Back between Luke and Vader. It felt, everything just was so teed up. The tension wasn't in seeing lightsabers flashing around. It was the tension between those characters. Mm-hmm. You had Kylo Ren, who has just committed himself to the dark side now by killing Han. You have Rey, who has basically once again lost a parent figure in Han. And you see that emotion getting released in that fight. And it's about that. It's not about the lightsabers clashing off each other, which adds more power to the scene. I thought that was fantastic.
That's pretty cool. One of my favorite moments is when Rey finally discovers that she has the Force in her. So it's the moment when she's restrained and she leans over. She looks over to the stormtrooper and says, "You know, undo the restraints, leave the door open, and leave." And until I just found out afterwards, we found out that the stormtrooper that she's talking to.
It's rumored.
Rumored is Daniel Craig. And it kind of sounds all right. And he's got that swagger, you know, that Bond swagger that he has.
When I heard the voice, I thought, I know that person. But we'll see.
It was pretty cool. But yeah, it's just the fact that she does that classic line that we had from Obi-Wan back in episode 4, where he is basically saying these are not the droids you're looking for. And she, well, at first she kind of fails, and he basically, the stormtrooper says to her, "No, I'd rather, you know, we mentioned like I've cut on her head,
scavenger scum or something like that."
And then I think the realization of whenever she does use the Force, there is that kind of blank look that she does, or focus, and she just finds that inner peace, and then she just becomes really calm, really good. She's my favorite actor from the whole film, but she has that moment where she can just, you know, do that expression, and you know that something seriously is going to go down.
I want to mention something purely because you've just brought it up there. And it's a quick thing, and I know we're almost over now anyway. But I liked the fact that throughout this movie, there's multiple references back to the older ones. Mm-hmm. Multiple. Mm-hmm. But they're not used as fan service. They're not used as, hey, look, we're doing this. They're used with a purpose. You just talked about she basically does what Ben Kenobi did with the, these are not the droids you're looking for. They did it, they did that, and that's what I thought as well, but they did it for a purpose. They're trying to show you that Rey is now getting a bit more confident and a bit more powerful with the Force. So you understand that by the end of the film, when she has that fight scene, that she might actually, unlike Finn's character, she might actually put up a bit of a fight against Kylo Ren. You get that. So I liked that there was fan service in there, but it was fan service with a purpose. And that's why it didn't felt egregious when we had multiple, like when it just pans over to the pile of junk and you see the Millennium Falcon. I was like, excellent, excellent.
Well, speaking of things being brought up from previous films, there was that moment when General... How do you say her name? General Phasma.
Phasma.
General Phasma. Captain Phasma.
Yes. Captain Phasma is basically being... we've told that she's going to be going to the garbage disposal thing. I was like, yeah, that's cool. It wasn't cheesy enough for me to be like, this is too much. But it was just like, you know, Han's been there before. And it's only fair, so it's pretty cool. But yeah, we're gonna have to wrap this up because, you know, we could probably talk about Star Wars for days.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure Scott is probably gonna go and watch it again somehow.
Yep.
In the near future. Yep. But Scott, thanks for coming on.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Cheers, Scott. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please email us at spoilsportspodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Sean is at Sean Labode, and I'm at Dearmid_S. If you liked what you heard, click on the subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.